I think plus minus kind of tell you a lot.
Curry steps back. Bang! 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 Exclamation point!
The plus minus statistic.
It's a stat that tells the truth.
Are you a believer in that statistic?
You tell me. I know it's good to be a plus.
It's Warriors plus minus.
Plus minus, plus minus.
This is the end of the year episode of Warriors Plus Minus. It's not the end of our year, but the Warriors 24-25 season is officially done. We even did exit interviews today. Down in five, I got Tim Kawakami. I got Anthony Slater. We got a lot to talk about. Maybe we should just start with the obvious, most pressing issue, Jonathan Kuminga. He talked today. What you think of how Jonathan Kuminga?
You will. You're going right to Kuminga, huh?
Might as well. What are we doing?
Hot topic. MT.
We've been talking about this for a while. We might as well just get it out of the way. Let's go.
Yeah. What did I think? I think he purposely, and I had heard this was going to be the likely messaging going in, was just vague and, like, you know, deflecting of questions about his future, which, by the way, I think is the correct strategy. You know, he's more than a month from a restricted free agency that he doesn't have, you know, all the leverage in. The Warriors can match any offer sheet he gets. There's not a bunch of available cap space on the market. So in a lot of ways, if he is to get away from the Warriors, he needs the Warriors' help, and the Warriors need his help to you know, not lose him for nothing, try to get value out of him. So there's a lot of working together that is going to be needed here, even if the idea at the end of the day is a divorce. Or, you know, by the way, and we reported it last night, and from what I've heard, like, there's a chance, you know, they have to come back together.
They might also be made, like, for each other, right? They might
for
have
6 months. Six months is what it would be.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that would be a long-term recommitment. But yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, there's a chance, however slight, that not because the two sides love each other and want to commit to each other for $150 million for whatever years. It's because there might not be a way out of this right now. I think there will be. I think we all feel like there's there are paths that seem likeliest for him to leave in a sign and trade. But what if there is? What if there isn't? What if they can't figure out the right place to go, whatever, the right contract? He could be back. And so you have to play it open. You can't burn the bridge. And,
well, it's two things. It's two things from what I, you know, Kuminga has to get the contract he wants in the place he wants. But also, that place has to have players that are Warriors enough on the deals. From what I've heard, there's not just going to be like, oh, they have, you know, whatever, we'll take whatever player on whatever contract. Like, it has to be the type of deal that would interest them, you know, and that,
they
that might
literally
be tricky,
can't afford not to, right? They can't afford to just give up Kuminga and get nothing. Like, that puts them in a
or bad salary
or bad contract. Like, yeah, they don't want to take bad contracts.
I mean, they need players, is my point. Like, they don't that, and they, if you let Jonathan Kuminga walk without using him to get more players, you're in a worse spot than just keeping them.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, I don't think they have to get exactly, you know, the exact value back. I mean, I keep throwing this name up. I mean, like, what if there's a way to, you know, not D'Anthony Melton because he's a free agent and it'd be very hard for him to do that, but that level of player, you know, just get a mid, you know, somebody who would be like a mid-level exception, you know, use it as your mid-level exception when you don't have one, a non-taxpayer. Get somebody worth $13 million. Like, if the cap mechanics can be worked out, you can get serviceable players. They got D'Anthony Melton for that number. Dennis Schroeder went for that number. You know, these are not great players, and you would probably say the value isn't matching what Jonathan Kuminga's is at 22, but it's something, right? It's something to add to your roster who would be a player that Steve Kerr would play as opposed to most times Jonathan Kuminga. That's, you know, I think they've got to be moderate in their scale on this, and I think they will be a good solid player. It doesn't have to match the Jonathan Kuminga. What, because listen, the Jonathan Kuminga, you know, all the potential, all the talent is kind of one of the reasons why Kerr doesn't play him, is because he just does too much stuff and not the things he wants him to do. Get a player you know, younger player if they can, who can guard big guards or can, you know, a stretch five who doesn't have to be a star or even like a solid star, just somebody who can be a really good six man. I think that would be a solution for them to get out of the Kuminga situation.
I know somebody who might not like that solution, who might say, I'm giving up my
the
prize
owner,
draft
the owner of the Golden State Warriors.
Schroeder. Yeah. I don't know, Slater. You think that how you think that's gonna sit?
I'll just say this: he it is. I mean, look, people can read the story we wrote last night, which includes a long interview with Joe, where you know I thought one of the funnier things he mentioned was the fans behind him during Game Five talking about
all they
Kuminga.
Talked about was Kuminga.
Yeah, and, but. I will say within that interview where he makes it clear once again for the 90th time that he loves Kuminga in his future, he opened the door to the idea that, that it might be best for the franchise. They would have to, you know, look at all options. And I just think the fact that he's even willing publicly to creak open that door says plenty.
Well, it's been pointed out to me by people in the organization that Lacob loved James Wiseman even more than he loves Kuminga now. Lacob really didn't like the idea of trading Wiseman. He thought they were trading him at the low, low end. And they did trade him for Gary Payton II, right? I mean, not exactly a monster value, a guy who helped them, has continued to help them, but not like this equivalent value to a former number one overall pick, a number two overall pick, I'm sorry. So they can get there. It won't be something where they're going to do it for nothing. And maybe they're going to ask for a lot and then see how it goes. Hey, he's still got to get a team out there who's going to pay him, right? I mean, we got to figure out who that team is and if that's a place he wants to go. There's all these sorts of things. I just kind of have a belief if the Giannis thing goes down and a Durant thing could go down, just within that context, I don't think either one of them maybe end up with the Warriors, but just within all that, we know picks are going everywhere. They got to match salaries. Players are going everywhere just to kind of accumulate enough of a mass of things to make these players move. Maybe the Warriors can slip in there and move Kuminga for something that they can use, that they know they can use. And again, I got a big guard or a stretch five. Steph said it himself, like they could use size and they could use shooting. And I think they could use them combined. Get a big center who can shoot the ball like they try to do with Markkanen. I don't know who's available. You never know who becomes available. But like just get somebody like that that you can say he's our sixth or seventh man, maybe even their starting center. And that's already more than they're going to have with John Kuminga because they're just not going to play him that much.
I see the difficult part that I think they'll have is they've already done that and these guys just didn't prove to be like playoff players. So I mean, you're not just saying get that guy. You got to get a guy who they know can win because this is your last chip. This is it. Yeah, yep. So you do it for Buddy Hield. Buddy Hield is a shooter. He didn't make shots in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean,
He did in game seven.
I was going to say, he actually did. He might have been the only guy that did. But, he had 33 in game seven. He was great in game one. And then by the time Steph got hurt, I don't think it mattered really anymore what the role players did.
I'm just saying, they needed to go to players who could produce. Like, yeah, he had a monster game seven and essentially saved the season.
I think the argument you're making, I believe, if I'm hearing you right, is they did this with Klay Thompson last summer, right? They signed and traded him. They let Chris Paul walk and then signed and traded Klay Thompson. And instead of, trying to go big fish hunting, go Levine, whatever, they just decided to bring De'Anthony Melton, Buddy Hield, and Kyle Anderson in the door. It ended up being like a five-team, sign and trade with Klay. And I think we saw their depth and, that was nice. But at the end of the day, it wasn't enough high-end talent. And is that what you're saying? Like,
yeah, it wasn't like, all right, it's playoffs. We can rely on this. And I think it's going to be a harder sell because of what they just went through. Whereas, theoretically, it would have worked before. But the players who they can say, yeah, we can rely on this dude in the playoffs. Because keep in mind, the idea that Steph got hurt only means it could happen again. And Jimmy could get hurt next year.
You can't
go into it saying, everybody's gonna be fully healthy. Hey, what are you gonna do if one of those guys go down? Like, who got? And the $8, $12, $13 million player, it's tough to find a guy you know can do that. And if you're Steph and you're Jimmy, you're looking around, you're like, hey, we gonna trade Kuminga and we gonna get you X player who we have no idea about.
So,
Joe, that's just it's a tougher sale, I think, than
Kuminga
to stay.
I think that's fair, but yeah, I mean, so what you're arguing for is just keeping Kuminga, matching, giving him a contract he wants, figuring it out later. And by the way, again, as I mentioned earlier, I do think that's on the table. I mean, I think that, you know, the veterans and the coach have to be amendable to you know, bringing him back and essentially, and one of the things I've heard
is altering their offense. Yeah.
If that is the path that comes back, not only an alteration of the offense, but Steve Kerr having a willingness early in the season to give a real 30 game runway to a lineup that includes the three veterans, Kuminga, and we'll just say Pajemski in the fifth spot, because down the stretch of the season when Kuminga came back and they felt too rushed to ease him back into the lineup when he was rusty, they only gave 13 minutes to that lineup. It closed that Lakers win. It was pretty good, but he just wouldn't go to it. And look, there was urgent reasons why he didn't. But if they do decide to bring Kuminga back, if that is the path they have to go, there has to be conversations about, you know, and Tim, you kind of asked Kuminga about this a little bit today. And again, he wasn't super open necessarily about it, but I do think he would need an assurance that he's coming back to a real runway to give it a shot before they maybe pivot off it at the deadline.
Yeah, I mean, it was my question, so maybe I feel this way, but I thought that was maybe the clearest answer he gave. It was like, sure, you'd like to have that. You know, he didn't say, you know, I demand to have that, but you'd like to have it. He's going his fifth year, and we know he's young, but this is going to be his fifth NBA year. You usually are what you are by this point in the NBA. And one, is Steve Kerr ever going to do that? And even if he does, is John Kuminga going to believe that? You know, this is the point where they're at. And you know, Kerr is going to go to the 24-8. They went, you know, after getting Butler, and he's going to say that way plays. That way is how we do it. And if we just get a player who fits with that, and you know, somebody who could hit shots, who's not Buddy Hield, and maybe Buddy does it, maybe this other player does, or someone who enables Draymond not to play center and is a stretch five. I just think that that is going to be much more appealing to them, and or to have to force Steve Kerr. Literally, right? I mean, we know they would have to force Steve Kerr to make a promise like that. And I don't think you want to start doing that. So, again, it's not impossible. I think it would last 6 months, frankly, because then they would be able to trade him in December if they sign him in July. And that's going to be awkward. That would, the whole thing would be a little awkward, but it was awkward this year too, right? They went through it. This is just his contract.
The one thing, and I've heard this, yeah. Well, not, the one thing I said that I have heard, you know, more on the Kuminga side of it is, at least he would be paid. You know, it's a lot easier to go through a little bit of that when you have, you know, you're on a 4 year, you know, 120 or whatever the deal would be, as opposed to like what this past year was, right? It was like, it wasn't in some ways a different version of Klay Thompson's last year with the Warriors.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I mean, in some ways,
like the contract loomed over everything. And in a lot of ways, I think the Kuminga, you know, contract unsettled contract loomed over a lot of this past season. Number one, two, what I would say, as far as from the Kuminga side, it probably, like, we would all agree, it's probably just better for his career to go elsewhere. He showed it in that series. Like, he kind of needs to go spread his wings. Like, he's not a bust of a pick. There's an immense amount of talent, and I just think he needs to go somewhere to figure out what he is and what he isn't. And I think what he did against a good Minnesota defense, blowing past Naz Reid, going through guys, finishing over Rudy Gobert, sure, there's plenty of flaws in his game, and you could say it's not all winning qualities and maybe it dooms you in a playoff setting, but there's a regular season setting that I think he wants to stretch his legs in a little bit, and there might be a 20 point per game score on sure, probably a lottery team or a fringe playoff team at best, but I think he wouldn't mind, you know, testing that out, and I can understand that, as opposed to being a fringe rotation guy for the Warriors.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm going to take I'll take less money to go somewhere and get that. If I'm him, I'm not coming back.
And also, do you know what $30 million a year would do to the Warriors' luxury tax situation? I mean, he might be worth it, but given the current circumstances and the current head coach and the current players they have, would that be worth it? It would be like $90 million a year, given where it would put them because of where they are right now. I know adding another player would be similar, but you know, another player who you know fits. I got to give a credit. I'll just say somebody from Twitter, which I criticize, but sent me this idea. I don't know whatever feasible, but right now, would you do Jonathan Kuminga for Andrew Wiggins? I think I might.
So I don't.
We know, Steve would.
Yeah, I don't absolutely. Believe. Gary Payton with a huge shout out to Wiggs. I didn't expect that today. Like that, how shocking it was for them to lose him. I didn't really.
I'm not saying this with 100% certainty, but from my understanding, I believe that is like non-compliant in the CBA. I think it's a year he can't be retraded back to them.
Okay.
You know, somebody could correct me if I'm wrong, but that is something I've heard within this process.
Derek Fisher rule.
It used to be the Zdrunas Ilgauskas one, but that was if you got traded and then got cut, you couldn't go back. But again, maybe I will be corrected, but let's just say I've heard that floated as an idea over this month, and it has been shot down because of the idea that it couldn't happen this summer.
Okay. I'll just say something like that. That's what I'm saying. And Wiggins might be on the high side of talent, but not value. We know his value is, you know, not nearly as high as sometimes we think it is, as much as he helped them to win that championship. But something like that. I mean, let's just say Wiggins-level player. Would you guys do that? Kuminga for a Wiggins-level player?
I mean, Wiggins, you know.
To me, it's more about
you know you can count on him if you're missing Steph. Like, Steph played 70 games this year. Do you want him playing 70? You know, he even talked about managing it so they're not, like, in this super race.
I don't think anybody
expecting Butler to play. Butler ended up, I think he only ended up with 55 games. But
well, how much did he suspend? Yeah, he played, like, the last 54 out of 55.
That's probably about what you, like, who's going to have the team? Because the whole point is to be able to rest these guys and not lose games. So, to me, it's got to be somebody who you could say, yeah, we feel good about this player having the reins while these guys sit out or if somebody gets hurt. To me, that's going to be the qualifier.
Yeah, I mean, all these guys might not be possible, but I'm saying Melton, Wiggins, that's the kind of player that – works for me. But Melton is unsigned. You're hard capped if you do it, but I guess you could hard cap yourself. I mean, I don't think that would be killer.
I think Melton's a veteran minimum target. I mean, we're talking about a guy who played barely any games off a back injury, then came back, played 6 games and tore his ACL. He's intriguing for the Warriors. I am curious what he thinks about the way the Warriors just traded his contract right away. But to me, especially because I don't, you know, if he tore his ACL, are we sure he's going to be ready for the opener? He's got question marks body wise. So to me, if he's available on the minimum, he's the perfect target. But beyond that, I would be wary.
Yeah, I could go a little. Obviously, we could go a little more than minimum, or you could try to do it for the taxpayer mid level. But those, I'm just saying, those are the kinds of players I would be thinking about. And if you add a Melton like and a Wiggins like. Or maybe you would want a center there instead, like whoever they, you know, a shooting center. I don't know.
Even Adams.
Yeah, you know, Brook Lopez. I mean, you know, I think you are an improved team and you're using the Kuminga money instead of giving it to somebody that you might not end up playing. You really might not end up playing them. And we all can, you know, think, Jesus, I think you could find room for him. But we all know, Kerr, when it comes down to it, he might not play him. And then you're paying $90 million a year giving tax liabilities to somebody that he's not playing or might not play. And if you add two other interesting pieces at whether it's for the exception or whether it's in a sign and trade for Kuminga, I just think it helps the roster. And I think that's the way this is. This might not be exactly their plan, or it might not be what everybody in the front office is hoping, but I think that is the most practical plan for them.
Yeah, I think it might leave them in the same situation. And judging by how disappointed they were, I mean, they couldn't win a game without Steph. Like, against a team they all feel like they could have beaten with Steph. It's not a very strong, you know, it's not a strong point of, like, confidence for these kind of filler players. I don't know that they need a star. But somebody who
give me a level of player then that you're saying it's got to be.
I'll give you one.
Go.
Jordan Poole.
Jordan Poole. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, listen, would help. That would help them. Would help them. Yeah. I could absolutely understand that one.
Yeah. I mean, it's score, right? I mean, what? Yep. Although, you know, scorer, we say that.
Playmaker, like, yeah. I mean, coming to the scorer.
That's right? What I'm saying. It's like, well, you know, like, you take him off the roster. They would have scored 81 points a game against Minnesota in the last four. I mean, the reality is, like, they're doomed without Steph.
Just like most teams are doomed without their best player right now.
They lose the series without Steph, yes.
Can't You're saying they should have won the game? Without Steph? Well, that's a little bit of...
It's a tough thing. Like, all I'm saying is, like, even, I mean, Joe eventually got there where it's like, yeah, we made the second round. It's hard without Steph, but there wasn't this sense of, yeah, we, you know, we didn't have our best player. We did all that. It was more like Steph was hot. Joe was hot. When we first called Joe, he was hot. It's like, how do you got to extend the series. And you're looking at players like, hey, who do you feel good about saying, all right, moving forward, who do you feel good about saying, hey, if Steph misses 10 games, like, who's got this?
Well, I'll say a few things. Number one, I think you would want a better version of Butler. I think he was a little compromised. I think that it's part of the flaws of the roster, or even, you know, the second most famous player on the roster, Draymond Green. Like, he's a little bit limited once, like, you know, particularly offensively when Steph Curry's off the floor and he can't do the DHO game. And you just see the roster that in a lot of ways you have a lot of players that play very well with Steph Curry, but suddenly he's away from the situation and it's harder for them to operate. It's why suddenly Kuminga, who you would say the opposite about, right? Like, at times he struggles to work within a Steph Curry ecosystem, but the moment Steph Curry leaves, so suddenly he looks like a much, you know, better, more productive player that has to get 40 minutes instead of 0 minutes. So it's kind of a tricky calculation. But as far as what maybe they could do, I think you know, they have picks to trade. They have Brandon Pajemski. They have sweeteners that could get you to better players, maybe even on reasonable deals. But, you know, that's something to think about.
I got a guy for you, TK. I don't know. He doesn't fit the size. Just the size isn't there. But, you know, very reasonable salary. Would you do Kuminga for Kobe White?
You know, it's a Jordan Poole sort of thing, right? I mean,
yeah.
I probably would.
Money. I think he's making like $12 million.
Yeah, I probably would do it. I don't know. I mean, again, that's about the level of value. Not my favorite player, but yeah, you could see him. I mean, does he work in a second unit with Butler? And you could say the same thing about Jordan. I don't know, but that's the level of player. I'm not going to say yes. You know, the point that Slater made about Draymond is very true. It's been brought up. Like, they have to go through some gymnastics to fit players with Draymond, especially when Steph's not there. And that's what the Markkanen thing was. Like, if you just get a stretch five, you can just park Draymond at the four and you can have another two shooters out there and it works. When you have Draymond at the center, or you're playing him at the four and you're playing a non-shooting center, you get stuck offensively a ton. And it's just harder to fit that jigsaw puzzle together. And if they had, you know, they were hoping Quentin Post would be that, and we saw him fade, and that happens. And we'll see what he is like in the second season. It's a lot to ask out of a second round pick that no one really had heard of and had not played, you know, major tournament basketball or anything like that. If they can find somebody who can just hit that, you know, the Naz Reid thing, although, you know, I don't, maybe we're all sort of down on Naz Reid after this series because he did not look
Naz
good.
Is but, yeah. They take Naz in a heartbeat.
Yeah, Naz Reid, just a center who is willing and able to take those shots would be a door opener for the Draymond situation, if you ask me. They get stuck with Draymond. You know, he does so many good things. We know this. He makes decisions, and he play obviously the defensive stuff, obviously the leadership. But you do get stuck with lineups when he's out there that just cannot space. I
mean, that's Kuminga.
I mean, doesn't space. Right? You're right. I mean, listen.
No, I'm saying that's one of the big reasons Kuminga's in this situation. It's because it's tough to play with Draymond.
Yep, in unspace. And there are a limited number of players who fit this that I realize that. There's way more wings that you can figure out. There's way more guards you can figure out. There just aren't that many playable stretch fives. But if they could get one, I think that would be a really interesting way to play this. And you have a stretch five that you can either start or you can play with Butler or you can mix and match. Again, not the easiest position in the world, but and he's old, and I wouldn't trade necessarily Kuminga for him, but there might be a way to get Brook Lopez given what's going on in Milwaukee, right? I mean, we don't know what's going on in Milwaukee this offseason. He's old, but that guy defends the rim lesser these days because he's old, but he still does. Former Defensive Player of the Year, and he shoots a three. Like, that is something that they thought they might get out of Quinton Post, and it was different, right? Their offense was different when Post was hitting threes.
Yeah, he had a pretty bad down season and kind of got played off the floor a little bit in that Pacer series. But, you know, again, they're not, you know, flush with flexibility here to solve their issues. So
yeah, I mean, it just a guy who can move the ball and hit the three. I just think there's some interesting. They did this on the fly. That's one thing I was thinking last night. They did this on the fly, and Jimmy was incredible doing it on the fly. But these aren't the players you necessarily would have picked. You know, at least the ones that Kerr was playing to do this. They got a chance to pick some players. I know not all the players, but you know, Dunleavy can go try to figure out. And, you know, Kyle Anderson, Buddy Hield, and De'Anthony Melton weren't perfect, but there are still players in the league. He managed to get them. It was all through the Clay thing, I know. But they have the Kuminga thing, and there is a comparable to that. You can use that contract to leverage yourself into two or three players. I just think it's that's what they have to do. They might not get the right players, but then you could juggle again, as we've seen Dunleavy do. Would he juggle it again twice, you know, in the middle of last season? They just got to kind of fiddle around. They got a whole offseason to do it with. They got an idea of what works, and Kuminga's their piece to do it. And they just, instead of bringing him back and forcing it in there at a number that would take them way into the tax, way into the first apron, possibly to the second apron, which I don't think they want to do. I just think you use that, you leverage yourself into some really solid players, which are going to be available. No guarantees, but they're going to be available.
Yeah. There's also, this is where John Phelps, their new cap guy, and really the front office in general, has to be creative. Kuminga's team, Aaron Turner, they all have to be creative, because you mentioned the aprons. That makes these signing trades a lot harder. You know, you get capped at certain numbers and you start to try to bring in different teams. Like, these are very hard deals to complete, and increasingly more because of this new CBA. So, especially, you know, and that's going to depend on how much money he makes. And how much money a team is willing to give him. And in some ways, I think the way he played in this Minnesota series probably opens the door up a little bit more for more suitors and more money and more opportunities here. But it's what needs to get solved over the next month and a half or so.
So Butler is, you know, getting quite a bit of heat for not delivering that one game and being passive, you know, I guess. The playoff Jimmy version wasn't exactly there. Obviously, when it was there, he was surrounded by shooters, and the Warriors just couldn't shoot without Steph. Did we learn anything in these playoffs about Jimmy Butler without Steph that maybe informs, you know, next season, or how he played with Steph is enough for them to be validated and thinking they can contend?
Well, I think, first of all, I think he really is a two. It isn't like a sacrifice for him to be a two. He's a two.
I mean, he's calling himself Robin.
Exactly. So, like, yeah, this is him playing along
He was acting like he was honored, like, to be number two.
Exactly. Yeah. He's playing along with it, obviously, to make sure that Steph understands, and it certainly is making it more comfortable there for him to keep saying it. But it's also true. He is a two. He is not a guy that you can just say, go get 25 shots. It's just, he's not comfortable doing it. He's not too particularly good at it, maybe once in a while. So, but he's a really good number two. He's an interesting, tough.
He could be like a 1B sometimes.
Exactly. But he's not a one. Like, that, I think that's really clear in a lot of people's minds. They're really happy with what he did. They're happy that he's fit in so well, but he is not. This whole playoff Jimmy, go get 40. That's not who he is anymore, but that's okay. but you do need scoring around him. Like, you, even if you have Jimmy, you need more scoring. And
he had that. That's the thing. He had it in Miami, and I know it's like a bunch of undrafted picks, but Gabe Vincent, Caleb Martin, and Duncan Robinson, them dudes were knocking down shots. Like, they were.
Yeah, so they need to get him. They need to get him an extra shooter or two. I mean, Duncan Robinson's a name. Duncan Robinson's a name that might, you know, when we talk about various, you know, mid-tier pieces around the league, I wouldn't be shocked if he found himself, you know, in Golden State. But I watched a 47-point Butler game, like the highlights of it. It just popped up, you know, I think maybe 3 years ago, playoff game in Boston where he scored 40-something. Just had more pop, more lift, dunking, you know, at the rim. There's just more juice on his drives. I mean, it's just mid-range, it's like all, yeah. It's like, yeah, it's just, that's just the natural aging process. He's still an excellent player. I do think we should remember prior to the tailbone injury, he went, remember the Clippers game 82, 30-something points. He was awesome that night. Memphis in the play-in, he was awesome. Game one in Houston, he was awesome. Three straight kind of do-or-die type environments. He did turn it up offensively. And then in the first quarter of game two, he gets undercut, and I just don't think we saw the same guy physically after that.
I do think
also think McDaniel's not having to guard Steph anymore and guarding Jimmy.
Absolutely.
That was a big deal. McDaniels is a freaking defensive stud, and we've seen it. And it's interesting that Steph can score on him, though, and Jimmy can't. Sometimes it's just types, but that seemed to change the series for Jimmy, too, I thought.
I do think, Slater, you were saying it before, and it just was visceral in this whole run, that even playoff Jimmy, it wasn't always this go get you 40, right? It was kind of just the grind of doing everything. And I think him realizing, I really got to get 40 every night. Like, is that what you asked me? Like, I'll guard people, I'll rebound, I'll do everything. But it that just go get me 40 every night. He needs a matchup. He needs to be able to take advantage of something. When he does that, he can just keep milking that. Like, he will cook. It was amazing how he went at Dante DiVincenzo. I'm telling you, when that dude see a white guy in front of him, he is gone.
Also, but, Marcus, you covered the Nuggets Heat finals, right?
Yes.
He was pretty tired by that series. Yeah, he finally went up against a Western Conference team. And typically there's better talent in the West, although obviously his Boston series are legendary. But he was he was not very productive in that Nuggets finals. Like, he kind of was up against a team and at a fatigue level that he just kind of ran up against a wall. Like, that happens. It happens.
It was tougher to find a matchup too. Like, you had Aaron Gordon and Kentavious and, you know, Bruce Brown. Like, it was tough to say, hey, I'm about to pick out this guy. Like, he's really good at that ISO, picking out a guy, but he's got to have people around him to take advantage of what he does, which is a very large part is driving and setting other guys up. And he just didn't have that. So I actually do think I think he'll be fine next year. I do think he's good enough if he's next to Steph. I just think it's a lot to ask him to carry, like Pods and Moody and Draymond.
Yeah, you need a real three. You need a three. Like, you know, Steph's an incredible one. Jimmy's a great two, but they're not just one and two. They need a three. Like, you need a third scorer who – how many times have we said Steph needs a second scorer? But I think to be championship level, they need that third guy, because those two – aren't always going to do, you know, not going for 40 and 30. You know, they're not going for 35.
Yeah, see, that's why I think it's tough to give up Kuminga. Like,
I mean, listen, if they would play him, I would agree with you, but they're just not going to.
Well, part of the reason it is what we're all saying is, it's again, it's the pickle they're in, because everybody's right in what we're saying. But part of the reason Miami grew cold on Jimmy Butler, was because he kind of tended to throttle it back in the regular season, particularly the early portions of regular season. And he needs to. I think physically at this stage of his career, he needs to take the regular season very easy at times. And that is where, to Marcus's point, like, that would be where Jonathan Kuminga could make a lot of sense next year. But also, everything else we're talking about.
But then when it gets serious, Steve's like, all right, we got Jimmy, Jonathan, you're out of the road.
Yeah. Also, there's Jonathan Kuminga's desires at this point. He has finally facing an opportunity where he has a little bit of leverage to go, hey, maybe that's not the career I want to have.
Listen, watch when the team gets him in a room. he's going to be out of here so quick. Some team, whoever it is, Brooklyn, Miami, whoever, is like, man, we got a plan for you. It's going to sound so good to him.
20 like, shots a game. 20 shots. Sounds
amazing to him. Like,
you're not coming out. You are not.
Yes, he will be playing 35 minutes a night.
He's, by the way, I mean, he, like, I have believed in his talent probably more than most people. I think we all three would put ourselves in that camp of like being more stronger believers in his talent. He impressed me as a scorer in this Minnesota series to the point that I understand it's going to be probably relatively inefficient on a not great team, but like, this guy's going to score a lot of points in the league.
Yep.
He, you know, put him on the Nets theoretically, let's say next season, and sure, maybe they're winning 22 games. He's probably going to average like 21 a game or something like that.
The only thing that's going to stop him is Cam Thomas.
fighting over the ball.
And like, people can scoff at the idea of that because, like, oh, you know, you're not being a winning role player on a playoff team. Like, you know, it's probably pretty fun at the age of 22 to average, you know, 21 per game. It's like a number two option on an NBA team. Like, you know, that sounds like a pretty fun life, making the type of money that he's probably going to make.
Especially after four years with the Warriors, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the comparison. It's not like he's getting guaranteed 18 minutes on this team. He's sometimes getting zero. And most recently, when it really mattered and they had their full roster, he was getting zero. So that's a big difference. Like, you can say, if he was getting 16, okay, we're probably going to give you 22. You go, okay, I get that. But you're going from zero to what? Zero to next step, 12 minutes a game. I mean, you know, that is the tricky issue. And the money is the tricky issue, all these things. We all agree this guy is fascinating to watch. I thought he played good defense. I thought he was our best guy on Edwards, by the way. Just the physicality of him. Like, Ant wasn't just going right through him. I still like Pajemski as a player, but my God, when he got matched up with Ant, good Lord.
That's where I was going next.
Yeah. I mean, Pods is an important player. He is an important player because Steve is going to play him. Like, that, he is going to play him, and there are good reasons for it. He rebounds the hell out of the ball. He is he sticks his nose into the loose balls. He tries on defense. He's not very good on ball, but he'll play off ball. He gets steals. Like, he's an important player. I don't know if he should be their starting two guard, though. Like, I'll throw that out. I don't know that should happen.
I don't think he can. Yeah.
And the size is the problem. As Steph said, like, I think it's size at all positions. And remember how, you know, they got clobbered with Steph and Pajemski and CP last year. Like, you get hammered by the 6'6" guards, and they could use one. And on Clay being obviously the ideal, and, you know, I don't know if they'll ever get anybody like Clay, but they could use somebody who just has length, who can rebound, who can, you know, help defenses matching up against a forward. Like, they get matched up with a forward now, either one of their guards, they get beat. And if they're down low, that is an issue. I don't know how they fix that. That's a tougher one because those guys are extremely valuable that you can play and then can shoot the ball. And we also think they need shooting. There's all these things they do need. But if they could find another guard, and Melton is not as big, but Melton can play bigger, I think, sometimes. Like, that kind of player. I mean, maybe it was just a facade. I don't know. But how good did they look in those Melton games? We've said, like, he was MVP of the league because they were so good when Melton was there, and then he gets hurt and they're not good. If they could possibly find a player like that, move Pajemski to the guard on the second unit who works well with Butler and maybe shoots the ball well, and sometimes he starts when Steph needs a night off, sometimes he starts when the other guard needs a night off, I think that's really what his role in the NBA is. I think maybe it took a year for everyone kind of calm down after his rookie season to figure out really what his best spot is on this team in the league. And I think it's as a third guard.
Yeah, he's got to be comfortable enough to play like he played in game 5. Like, I always felt like that's who he should play. Like, he has the skill to be aggressive offensively, and you can't be, you know, undersized and lacking in athleticism and also, like, passive. Like, the way he was attacking, looking for a shot, like he's got it in him if he ever, like, consistently gets the confidence. But I also think he plays well enough, like, all over the floor. Like, he's got some value, man. Like, Pods is valuable. Like a lot of people will want him on the team, and maybe not to use him as, all right, we need you to go out here and be our starting two guard to get us 20. Like that's where I wonder, like, is he best used as value to build this team? Like, for me, you know, I'm
are you going, saying in the trade market?
Yeah, on the trade market. Like
the league likes.
They love it. I mean, how do you not like him? He's making less than $4 million. He does just about everything. And in 2 years, he'll be a consistent 15 a game scorer.
Yeah, I will say this. In 2 years, him and his agent, Bill Duffy, will be asking for a raise.
A lot more, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, one of the big things with him, and people can roll their eyes at it, but the numbers like him, the plus minus, the rebounding from the guard position, all that stuff, he really pops analytically. And when you go around the league and you talk to numbers people, and they're flooded into the league in almost every front office, they circle him as a guy that they like. So that, yes, he's a big time sweetener in any type of trade package. But the problem is, I mean, you know this, you know who else really, really likes him? The Warriors front office likes him. And by the way, their coach likes him. It's been one of the rare young players that, like, you know, in this era that Steve Kerr doesn't have to be convinced to put on the floor. You know, it's like, he's like, yep, no problem. 34 minutes a night. So, yeah,
might be too much sometimes,
but that's why you keep them. I think if you're them, you know, in this juggle and scramble to find players that you can fit and that Steve Kerr will play and that the front office likes, you kind of have to hold on to the ones that do qualify in all every regard. And you have to assume he's going to be a better offensive player.
He's gonna have to play somebody. He can't not play everybody.
Exactly. He's just like, you're playing Hield and you're playing Pajemski. I think those are set, even though you can say, you know, sometimes they don't give you much, but sometimes they do, and they just do stuff that Kerr needs for that system. You need one more guy. I was like, one more guy who might be, you know, more of an offensive weapon than either one of them, at least more consistent offensive weapon, then I think you have your guards. I just don't think you're not going to get a lot better than that. Maybe fans won't like to hear that, but one more guy and, you know, one more guy on the front line. I think that's what you were looking at. You know, it's not the superstar. And, you know, ask Curry about that. Like, you know, last year they tried to get Paul George to get Lauri Markkanen. It's like, is this year different? And he said, yeah, it is. And there's a clarity of what they need. Now they're always going to go for,
I mean, they got the guy though. It was Jimmy.
Yeah, they got the guy. That's it. They got the guy. Now they could go do it again. Like, they could try. It's been pointed out to me that they could see if someone wants to trade for Jimmy, or they could see, you know, whatever else is out there. I mean, Draymond, I don't think is on the table, but I think they would take calls on it. But Jimmy's the guy.
They'd send them all to Milwaukee.
Yeah. For Giannis, you make that call. For Durant, who, I mean, like, I think maybe the door is mostly closed on Durant, but that doesn't mean Joe Lacob thinks the door is closed on Durant. I don't think they're getting Durant. But aside from that, it's going to be like the sixth and eighth man. Like, that's what they're looking for. And if everyone can be convinced that that's Jonathan Kuminga, then that's fine. I just don't, I don't know how many raised hands you have. It's certainly not unanimous in the front office and decision-making people of the Warriors. Try to get two other guys. And I think Pajemski and Hield are on this team next. I mean, barring, you know, whatever, we all know anything could happen, crazy things. You might need the contracts, you might need whatever. But I think Pajemski and Hield are on the team. I just don't think either one of them should start in an ideal world.
How do you get the other guys? Like, how do you get them if you don't? Like
Kuminga, the Kuminga contract, or
you get two guys out of
can you get somebody at the veterans minimum? Can you get somebody at the taxpayer mid level? Again, it's not easy, but
let me give you a way. You find somebody you really like at $13 million, and you go, here's Moses Moody in a first round pick.
Yep.
Okay. There's exactly a way.
Now, what do you guys think Moody's value is?
I think a team wouldn't mind buying low. It's a decent value contract. I think he's shown for long stretches of the regular season he can produce. I mean, even last night he comes in, and I know it was like lower stakes, and he had missed 14 straight shots at a key moment of the season, but he just bursts out and scores 15 points or whatever it was at the start of the fourth. So I think if I was a team that was rebuilding and I had a better player than Moody, I would take him in a protected first, very happily, and give away, you know, a better player. Marcus, you mentioned it about Coby White. I don't remember his exact contract number, but if you're the Bulls, if you're the Bulls, would you take Moody in a future first for Coby White? I mean, it's considering the Bulls, you know, stagnant situation. Sure, you're probably getting a downgrade in talent, but you're still getting a young player that'll help in a rotation and a future pick. So that's
yesterday squander there is going for the play-in.
Yeah.
Here's a perfect guy for the Warriors. Yeah. Perfect guy for the Warriors. Trey Murphy.
Oh my God. Yes.
Look at his contract though. It's gone up there a bit.
He's gone up there. And what? New Orleans gonna trade him?
Averaging like 30. Eh?
30 He's also million? Yeah, I mean that's hiring Draymond. They don't have that much room. Number one. Number two, injury prone lately. And then, you know, Tim mentioned it, but I don't know. New Orleans is wacky. Joe Dumars just kind of got the job there. I have no clue what they're gonna do in general. So I can't even pretend to know what.
I did think it was interesting that they sent Zion out there to represent them in the lottery. Like, that usually doesn't mean you're trading. Are they in Warriors land in the old time when they were in the lottery every time? If they sent somebody out there, they were marketing around that player and they weren't trading him.
Well, the rumor when Dumars came in, there was rumors that one of the things he planned to do was shop Zion. So that was probably the Pelicans franchise trying to say, hey, see, we stand behind them. But I think what you mentioned there was correct. You know, the Pelicans aren't exactly, you know, they don't have the greatest reputation. So I don't know that I would take that as 100% certainty that Zion's going to be there.
Who knows? But Trey Murphy, I think Trey Murphy, my God, that would be.
How about Herb Jones?
Herb Jones would be good. Yeah, absolutely. What's he making? Is he like 18, something like that?
I think it's like more 14. Like,
okay. Yeah, 14, it's more reasonable than Trey Murphy for sure.
Yeah, Trey Murphy's like 25 next year. And Herb Jones is 13-9. But they've got, like, DeJounte Murray at 31.
Achilles.
Yeah. Yeah. CJ McCollum's at 30 in his last year. I mean, somebody's going to have to move.
Well, do you think Moses Moody, where is Kerr going to be with him going into next season? Is that close to a lost cause? Is it something that
he had a rough patch.
So where does he fit? Where does he fit on this roster? He's like,
I think he ends up being the starting two guard. Two guard again.
If he's a good starting two guard, then they don't need to go get one, right? I mean, that would help them a huge deal. I don't know if he's quite there yet, but hey, that starting lineup was incredible, right? It was an incredible starting lineup, but I'm a little less bullish.
If he was shooting the ball like he was during a regular season in the playoffs, does Podziemski start or does Moody start?
Podziemski.
Yeah, Podziemski. I mean, Moody wasn't starting over Podziemski.
By the way, probably both, and then Buddy Hield never replaced
Buddy Hield.
Exactly. The problem with Moses is that the shooting is important for him in a way that it isn't for Podziemski, because Moses can't dribble. That's a problem. Right? You know, it's like that really, I think, bugs Kerr. Like, it just, the ball stops because he doesn't know what to do with it.
That's why Podziemski plays so much.
Yes, yes.
They don't have guys who can just handle the ball against pressure. And even Pods looked a little shaky for a moment there against, like, whenever Ant was on him, he got a little. Dante gave him problems, and he's one of their better ball handlers, sure ball handlers. They don't have guys who are just comfortable dribbling the ball. So you end up having to put Podziemski together. That's why he's like bricking every shot and still playing, because somebody's got to bring the ball up.
It's a very important part. And the ball ends up with him because the other players don't want it. It's like, don't pass it to me. I got McDaniels on me. Here's it back. I like Moses.
Coby White.
That would give them versatility. Kerr wouldn't love the size problems there, but as a six man, go light it up with you and Butler, go win the next 6 minutes. I could see it. You know, the Jordan Poole. That's the Jordan Poole rule, and they do miss that player. And they, you know, Buddy sometimes is that player, but most times is not that player. He's mostly a space guy. It's just stand over there and make sure the defense has to guard you, and then hit the shot when they don't guard you.
Also, he's not a six man. Coby White is starting on this team.
Start when he and Steph. That's a small backcourt, man. That's a small backcourt.
He going to get you 20 a night. That's all I know. He's getting you 20 a night. He's 6'5", though. He's not.
How many, oh, is he 6'5"? Like, I thought he was 6'2".
Nah, okay. Nah, he's like 6'5". He about pod size.
All right. Well, how many of those guys has Kerr started in his time here? Not that many.
Who? What you mean?
Like, he doesn't start that kind of player. He likes the more...
He started,
you know,
Jordan Poole.
Well, when Steph was out, not when Steph was in. He didn't start Jordan Poole. He had Klay Thompson, right? Or when Klay, Steph or Klay.
No, he started Poole to start open that 18-2 season, remember, because Poole had the starting two-guard spot.
It was because Klay was out, yeah. I mean, when he had the Klay option, he would play Klay.
Yeah. I mean, they've been searching for a while now, right? They started Dennis Schroeder for a while this year at that spot.
Yeah, they Lindy so. Waters started some games. Yeah. Hey, they can bring Lindy Waters back. I think I don't think Steve would be against that. Not that he's just
Slater.
Uh-oh, we got Slater's train.
Yeah, Kobe White averaged 20.4 last year in 33 minutes and 19.1 before that.
He is a guy you go.
This will get you a bucket, man.
He can win you a game. He can win you a game.
I've watched a lot of games where this dude just caught fire.
Slater, what's the DeRozan situation?
Give me 1 second on that. Another name I have heard, Colin Sexton, is another name I've heard.
Yep.
And it's in that same
realm. That's one I don't think Steve will start.
Yeah.
I don't think Steve will play Sexton.
Yes.
He just want to shoot every time. He's 6'3", right? Like, he likes
6'2". Yeah. I mean, but he's explosive. But
He is.
DeMar DeRozan is available,
Malik Monk would be perfect for them.
Yeah, those kinds of guys. Like, those are the kinds of guys right there.
Kingsland right now.
I mean, there's a team that, get Moody in a first-round pick. You know, would that be terrible? Maybe add another contract to it if they have to? Like, that's the kind of thing I'm thinking about. Like, just try to build that way. Get somebody for Kuminga, maybe get two guys. Figure out a way to get a stretch five, and then be creative with the rest of your roster and with a pick. Or, you know, I wouldn't give two picks up, but at least one pick. And find your way to a guard who can score, is versatile, and maybe a little more size if you can. Although, I mean, DeRozan's tall, but he's not the greatest defensive player. But, like, those are the little pieces here and there that I think that are going to be available, and I think Dunleavy's good at finding them.
Should there be a rethinking of this thing from the center position? I know, obviously, the stretch five is what is perfect with Draymond, but we just watched the playoffs where they just got, murdered with size, and the league is just getting bigger, right? It's a thing now. Like, everybody, the good teams have big bodies, from Hartenstein to Jokic, they dealt with Steven Adams and Shangoon. Like, you need some size now. Is it worth it to just, do they need to go get us a big man, like a legit big man, for the sake of, at some point, you're going to have to play up and maybe even spare Draymond? Do you go get a Steven Adams, even though he's not a stretch five? But do you get somebody like that, because at some point you just got to be big?
Yeah, they're hard to get. I think it'll be pretty hard to get. Steven Adams probably made himself money in that Warriors series, actually. And I assume Houston's going to be motivated to re-sign him and have more flexibility than the Warriors would. How about, I'll give you a name, Daniel Gafford. Dallas is loaded on their front line right now. Right, you know, they're bringing Davis and Lively back.
I think I'd rather have Cooper Flagg, to be honest.
you can make that offer too. You know, make Nico Harrison the offer. but, you know, Gafford, I don't know.
I think it's better if Nico comes to me, apparently. Like, it's
Nico's begging. Who's that Nike guy that he needs? Is Draymond?
Saying, should they go big? Like, is it too much to just keep playing small in the name of, speed, especially if they're going to be a defensive team?
Yeah, it's difficult because it's a specific type of five that you have to get with Draymond. But, you know.
And Steph. Like,
yeah.
Bogut always makes that point. Like the Steph thing means this, you're going to need a very specific kind of center, or at least a center who knows how to play certain things.
Who knows how to set screens. Yeah.
Yep.
So, you know, I mean, what's Looney's future? You know, did Trace Jackson Davis show y'all anything in his cameos to believe in him? Quentin Post, I mean, at this point, we're talking about a lot of roster spot usages on centers, and I'm not necessarily saying no, but it's got to be the right one. I mean, we talked about Brook Lopez earlier. That's an intriguing name.
Yeah, I'm thinking like, you know, Wendell Carter, right?
Yeah, that's a good name. That's somebody they've kicked the tires on in the past.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, these are all workable, right? But I mean, so Draymond and Wendell Carter, your front line. Is that going to match up with the Rockets? Going to match up with OKC? I mean, maybe.
I think at the end of the day, and I think we all would agree that the default when it comes, you know, time to try to beat the Houston Rockets in Game 6 is going to be Draymond at center, mostly because that just opens up the versatility of their lineups and their shooting and their floor game and just who they are. And like, I do think they need better center play through the course of the regular season to ease Draymond's burden. But I think if we're actually talking about
playoff time,
it's just going to be Draymond at the five when it matters.
But if it's like that the entire time, how good will Draymond be when it matters?
Well, yeah, and that's why, you know, again, like, I think Quentin Post is a fine regular season 20-minute per game center because, you know,
he ain't guard nobody.
Hey, guess what? I mean, look, take yourself away from the Minnesota series. Remember the whatever it was, 23-7 finish. Quentin Post was a massive.
Where he came
into Milwaukee. I can remember it. Okay.
Well, yeah, I'm saying the 3-point shooting, but they're saying defense, right? If they're going to be like, we're going to be a defensive team, we're going to be the best defense in the league. Like, can you be? Do you need to get like a defensive center then? Do you need to get some size?
Well, that's Kevon Looney. And if you just don't believe that Kevon Looney is that anymore, then you're flipping that roster spot for a fresher version of that.
Or TJD. I mean, if you're hoping for some growth out of TJD, you know, I think the likeliest is, yeah, you hope for Quentin Post can earn himself more minutes by being tougher on defense and maybe hit a shot or two in a big game. You're hoping for growth out of TJD. And then what? I mean, it's hard for me to believe they'd ever turn down Kevon Looney. I don't know what the number is going to be, but there's three centers right there. Maybe not Kevon, bring him back. I don't know if you get a shot at another center, but I mean, we all can understand they could use a better center who they can rely on, lock him in. Draymond can play the four. Sometimes Draymond plays a five instead of it being a mandatory thing. But I just don't, you don't want to mess around with just a center who's does nothing for you other than is big, because again, that screws up Steph. Not sure it's 100% great with Jimmy. Like, you know, Clint Capella, is that somebody who maybe, but maybe not? I don't know. Like, they ran him off the floor in the playoffs a couple times, and so I don't know that he would be there for them in any postseason play, but I think that's the kind of center what you're talking about who would be available.
James Wiseman.
James Wiseman? Oh, God. Yeah. Bring Poole back, Wiseman back. Who else are they bringing back? Bring them all back.
Where's Wiggins earlier?
Where's Wiggins? That's right. Elite.
Pat McCaw, where are you?
Oh, God. All right. Slater, we're getting a lot of Slater feedback here behind you. So
okay. All right. Well, I'm good on this part.
Yeah, I think we can tie this one up in a bow. Marcus started right off with heat right off the bat with Kuminga, so came out firing early.
Yeah, let's do it. You know, Steve Kerr and Mike Dunleavy still will talk. So maybe we'll holler at you after that. But make sure you leave us 5 stars. Please subscribe. Spread the word. Tell everybody how much you love Warriors Plus Minus. We got everything you need. It's going to be an interesting offseason. So we look forward to delivering the goods. For Tim Kawakami and Anthony Slater, are you hopefully close to home? We will holler at you next week or at some point this week.